Autism is a developmental disorder that appears in the first 3 years of life and affects the brain's normal development of social and communication skills, and it's on the rise. What are some of the signs that parents can look for at home? Why is the diagnosis important? And how can you get services? My name is Dr. Kylie Billingsley, and I'm a psychologist specializing in child and adolescent assessment, diagnosis, and treatment. And this is Parent Savers, episode 35.
Faster than a speeding toddler.
Sit still for just a minute.
Can soothe boo-boos with a gentle kiss.
Would you get down from there?
Able to clean poopy bottoms in a single swipe.
Oh, what did you eat?
Turning frazzled mommies and daddies into procreators of peace and harmony.
Ah, quit touching me.
It's Parent Savers, empowering new parents everywhere.
Welcome to Parent Savers, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I am your host, Casey Wilt. Parent Savers is all about helping new parents from the baby years through the toddler years. We are so lucky to have amazing experts in our show, so shoot us an email or call our hotline and we'll get your questions answered. We also have a free app, a free newsletter. You can like us on Facebook, you can send us an email, you can call our hotline. There are so many ways to be a part of our show. Also, did you miss an episode that's been archived that you're interested in, or you want to keep talking to the expert once the show stops? We have a Parent Savers Club where you can download all the archived episodes, get exclusive content, and so much more. So I'm a new parent myself. My son Carson just turned 2, and I'm joined here by two new parents, and actually one parent in the studio, one on phone. So Jody, why don't you go first? You're calling in.
Okay, I'm Jody Roberts. I'm a high school teacher, and my 22-month-old is named Tara.
Hi, I'm Carlin Kowalski, and I'm an elementary school special ed teacher, and I also have a 2-year-old daughter.
Before we begin today's show, here's John Arreal to tell us about some great apps for new parents.
Hey, Parent Savers, I'm John Arreal, founder of FamilyFriendlyVideoGames.com, here to talk about helpful apps for new parents. Today I want to talk to you about Doodle Buddy, which is a great free app for kids that's a drawing app, and it has stamps and it has a lot of different things. It is potentially the perfect app to hand to a toddler when you just want to get a little bit of a free time, whether it's at a restaurant or somewhere else, just to keep them occupied for a little bit. What Doodle Buddy has is kids can easily change the colors of each of the drawing and the thickness, but there's also a really extensive selection of stamps, such as smiley faces or clover leaves or kissing, that each make a funny noise whenever the kids hit the screen. So before you know it, they'll have hundreds of little kissy faces on the screen as the app goes, mwah, mwah, mwah. Doodle Buddy is a great app, and best of all, it's free. You can find a link to download it on this week's episode page of ParentSavers.com, and make sure to listen to future episodes of Parent Savers for more great apps for new parents.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Today on Parent Savers, we have psychologist Dr. Kylie with us, and this is the second part of our two-part series about autism, so I'm excited to have a different perspective than the one we did last week. So, Dr. Kylie, what are some of the early signs of autism that parents should be aware of?
Sure. So before I get started, I just want to let parents know that there are a number of signs and symptoms, and not just hearing one symptom that I talk about indicates that your child may have autism, but having a series of pattern of symptoms shows that kids may have an autism diagnosis. Some of the concerns could be not babbling before the the age of one. Okay. So that could be a big concern. Things like not orienting to the human voice, maybe showing more interest in objects and things rather than their parents or guardians or other people. Mm-hmm. Another huge concern is not really turning and looking when their parents call their name.
Well, my son does that all the time, but that's just to be, you know.
and that's why I said it could be, you know, but let's say he does it, like he never turns and looks, you know, or he is so engrossed in an object, like he won't even look at you when you walk into the room. Let's say that he's just not as interested, maybe even appears in his own world and just seems to not kind of be interested socially, you know, not looking at you, making eye contact. That's a hallmark. And it, just because a child, you know, may not have eye contact doesn't mean that they're on the spectrum, and it doesn't mean that they're not, but it's one of those signs to kind of keep an eye out for. Yeah.
So if you notice those symptoms in your child, what's the next step? Where do you go from there?
Well, in the U.S., if you have a child from 1 to 3, the regional centers are a great resource. They assess children from 1 to 3. If by chance your child's over 3, then you may want to contact your insurance and look for someone who specializes in autism assessment, who's a psychologist. And what you want to check for is someone who has a background in testing and using some of the important tools like the ADOS, which is known to be really reliable. It's a social sort of interview, and an evaluation that looks at really interviewing and getting a developmental history, and someone who sort of has that background in assessing and evaluating for autism spectrum disorders.
Before we go further into that, you know, what's the first step? Let's say you kind of think, oh, well, he's not looking at me in the room. Should I be concerned? Should I not be concerned? Because I feel like in the first year of life, you know, I've got friends, their kids don't babble. Is that a speech problem? Is that someone, you know, and that type of stuff, because I think parents are so afraid, one, for the label of autism. And so instead of, you know, jumping on these early detection signs, they just write it off or whatever. Or maybe they want to, you know, seek out more, but they don't want to jump to that it's autism. They want to see, who do you talk to? If it's just this little stuff, just to ask the pediatrician.
A pediatrician is a good step. A lot of times the pediatricians will have screens like the MCHAT. The MCHAT is something that parents could even Google online and have access to. That's a free sort of checklist. It asks, like, does your child enjoy bouncing on your knee? Does he look at you in the eye? Does he enjoy bringing things and showing things to you? It has a lot of these questions, and it's a great just screen. That's a first start, is sometimes just doing a screening measure. But I want parents to be aware, because I have a lot of patients that come in where their pediatricians are not as well educated in autism spectrum disorders. And I hear them say, you know, why didn't my pediatrician tell me? And so there are some pediatricians that aren't as attuned to some of those symptoms. And so parents bringing it up. And I always say, you know, trust that maternal instinct. If you see your child and you feel like they're very different from other kids, or you feel like something's just not right, and you know there could be something, it doesn't hurt to go to a regional center, maybe call a psychologist, ask other friends. Teachers are great resources of information, just to kind of get an idea. And it never hurts to pursue that. You know, 10 years ago, we had the wait and see. Even 15 years ago, it was more like, let's wait and see it, you know, and see what happens. And, you know, a little bit of that's okay. But when it's to that point where there's a lot of other concerns going on, and your maternal instinct is saying there's something not right, it doesn't hurt to have it investigated. And we'll talk about early intervention and why that's important.
Yeah, well, that's as I say. Yeah. We talked about that in the last episode. The earlier you detect it, the better off for the child. But Jody, what were you about to say?
Well, so, I mean, don't be afraid of, you know, looking out and finding someone to diagnose them. But what does that exactly mean for your child to be considered autistic for not only the child, but the parent?
Excellent question. I get that a lot. And I mean, that's probably something I talk with parents a lot in the beginning stages is, okay, what are the pros and cons of an early diagnosis? And, you know, I also educate parents that the autism spectrum is huge. It doesn't just mean a child is classically autistic. And I think that's what a lot of us think, is that child who's spinning in the corner or hand flapping and not interested at all. But now we know that there's kids who are very, you know, mild on the spectrum and just have more problems with rigidity and that social nuances. And what I say is that it's better to have the diagnosis, especially like in California right now, we have a law that was recently passed for these kids to start receiving early ABA treatment or applied behavior analysis, which is excellent treatment for kids on the spectrum, speech therapy, and OT.
Right. So would they be able to improve socially, like, for example, through these programs?
Absolutely. Actually, I see kids who, you know, let's say 10 years ago, their parents paid $120,000 a year or something crazy like that to get these early services, you can see tremendous improvements in these kids. And I mean, I have some kids that come in, you wouldn't even know that they were on the spectrum. There are some that I've seen who are in high school who have had early intervention services. And, you know, I don't like the term cure, but I like recovery, or they really significantly improve their symptoms to where you would hardly even know they're on the spectrum. They have friends, they're doing well. They may just have some slight subclinical symptoms, I like to say. So yeah, the early intervention, you know, and it doesn't mean you have to tell everybody, you know, it may be that you just inform, you know, you as parents know, you're able to scaffold these skills early on in your child. Like, okay, look at me in the eye before you give them juice, having them articulate that and look at you while they ask you. So some of these even small parent training tools can make a huge difference early on to where the child won't even be noticed sometimes to be on the spectrum as they get older.
Well, and you had said, you know, the spectrum, we've got this wide thing. So not necessarily if your child's not looking you in the eye, but he's doing everything else normally, and you start to do one of those tests that you see online and you see that they actually can go somewhere on the spectrum. This could be something like, I mean, I've talked with you before and you've mentioned someone you've seen and they're just, like you said, rigid. They've got, and so as a parent, you would just say, oh, they just like to be ordered to their life.
They like their routines.
They like their routines. Mm-hmm. And so we just write it off as saying, oh, they're just set in their ways. But in actuality, you're saying that could be a cause of a spectrum disorder, and getting help for it could help.
Well, I recently had a parent, and I've seen a lot of these kiddos that are just very mild on the spectrum. And she brought me in because he had a hard time transitioning between, you know, different tasks in the classroom, and with tantrum, had a huge tantrum reaction, but was very social. And so I did a full evaluation on the child. And what I saw was he's has minor, I would even say, characteristics of kids on the spectrum, but I did not diagnose him on the spectrum. But I said, look, these are the things to be aware of. I see a little bit of that difficulty understanding how his actions impact others. And that's a hallmark of kids on the spectrum. But the main thing he has a challenge with is this rigidity. So I said, you know, he has a behavioral problem. And I want you to do these intervention techniques early. I want you guys to try reinforcing him for when he does transition a little bit better to different tasks in the classroom. I want you to try, you know, just being aware of social nuances and really reinforcing him for playing appropriately with peers, and just kind of monitor him as he gets older. And I explained that, you know, doing these early, even parent type skills are going to prevent this child from having problems later on.
Well, and is it possible that I don't even know if this is true. Let's say he's got this temper tantrum issue. Mm-hmm. Can it get worse? Like, will he then get on the spectrum eventually, or can autism increase as they get older?
Yeah, for kids that are very mild, what we see is as they get into junior high and high school, that's when social nuances become very complex. Mm. That's when kids can start picking up and bullying and noticing, wait, you know, they fit in fine, just, you know, chase and some of tag and playground and those kinds of games. But when you put them in with high schoolers and junior hires, and they're older, and there's no longer that playground equipment, but you're having to hang out and understand how to enter and exit a group and all of these really nuanced things, that's when sometimes the more mild kids start having more challenges. So if you know that they could have that tendency to go there, and that's where sometimes I see girls on the spectrum get diagnosed in junior high, because they can be a little bit more mild than other kids. And so sometimes if you know sooner, like know early on, and you're using, let's say, some of Michelle Garcia Winner's social thinking type of curriculum with your kids, and you're helping them with transitioning, and you're just being more aware during their play dates and saying, oh, you took turns awesome with Johnny. Like, I'm really proud of you with that. And you're kind of reinforcing a lot of these skills. You're going to prevent those problems later on, and even prevent the diagnosis, versus those parents I see they're going to grow out of it. They're going to grow out of it. And then by the time junior high hits, they kept thinking they were going to grow out of it. Now they're depressed and anxious because they don't have any friends. They don't know how to deepen relationships at their developmental age. So if you can think of an autism spectrum disorder, it's more like their social and emotional maturity level is a little bit lower than other kids. So if you can kind of work on that a little bit more, you can prevent that gap as much as they get older.
Well, all I see is dollar signs. So when we come back, we're going to talk about psychological evaluations and how they work, as well as ways to access these services. We'll be right back. Today on Parent Savers, we have psychologist Dr. Kylie with us talking to us about autism. So, Dr. Kylie, what does a psychological evaluation involve, and how do parents find a clinician who's qualified to access this test?
Sure. So, I worked for a few years at Kaiser's Autism Spectrum Disorder Center, and we use sort of the gold standard of what autism spectrum evaluation should be. It usually includes a detailed parent interview looking at prenatal history as well as birth and all the way up until their present age, doing an IQ evaluation. That's just to rule out, you know, and look at sort of how their intellectual functioning is doing.
Do kids with autism have higher or lower IQs?
It actually depends, and that's very varied. I mean, some kids, and I think when we think of
spectrum again,
it's a huge spectrum. I mean, it ranges from kids who are very impacted, and may have some intellectual disability and be lower functioning, to kids who are, you know, Asperger's and may have like higher than normal IQ, off the charts, but socially and emotionally, they're a little bit more immature.
Okay.
So doing that IQ helps us to see, where are they at intellectually, you know, so that you know when interventions start, how likely are they to pick things up? Are they more of an auditory learner or more of a visual learner? That's important to know, too, in the classroom, as well as you're teaching your child different skills.
How does one find a clinician near them to do this? Because we got people from all over listening.
Okay, So, I mean, one thing would be you could either call your insurance and ask for providers in network who may have experience testing younger children with developmental delays or autism spectrum diagnoses. Or you could even, sometimes do a Google search or go to like the Autism Speaks network where they have, or website, I should say, where they have a variety of different clinicians in different areas who may do autism-specific assessments, so they can give a good recommendation as well. But I would say, you know, for parents to kind of do their research, talk to other parents, call, you know, a local, like, parenting-type place, or do research online to find someone who really specializes in doing autism evaluations.
Is this something that insurance can cover?
Absolutely. I would say almost all insurances will cover getting an autism spectrum disorder evaluation because it is a medical, it's a neurodevelopmental disorder, and getting early treatment really helps with a child throughout their life.
Can it be too late for a child to receive a diagnosis and treatment?
Excellent question. So right now, I've been a part of a lot of autism research as well, and I'm actually starting to do some research on adult evaluation and assessment. So, you know, it really, the earlier the better, but no, it's never too late to get a diagnosis. Like I said, junior high school students have been diagnosed. What it helps is it helps the parents and the teachers to understand almost like a learning disability. You know, a child who has a math disability, you're going to work harder on that. With a social disability, you can't really see it and you can't really measure it. But if parents know that they're a little bit lower socially and emotionally, they know how to adjust their expectations. You know, let's say they're socially, you know, let's say developmentally a 12-year-old, but socially maybe they're more like a 9-year-old, then you don't want to place the same expectations, and maybe just keep that in mind as you're explaining things to them and expecting things of them.
Yeah, and from the teacher's perspective, you know, it's great when kids can already come into our classroom with an IEP, an individualized education plan, where the assessment has been done by a speech and language pathologist, an occupational therapist, a school psychologist, and a teacher. And we can really get some detailed information of where that child is in all of those areas. And then it's a very detailed plan of what are our next steps and what are some reasonable expectations for their progress throughout the next year. Younger children can get an individualized family service plan, an IFSP, and I believe it's children 3 through 5, so preschool aged, and they can be getting services and have a plan in place for their whole family to be receiving the support from those providers, those speech and language pathologists and those special ed
and
teachers.
Is that through the school system?
It is. Kevin? It is. You can get your start at regional center, I know we talked about before, and they can refer you to your local school. You can even check in with your local elementary school. Their school psychologist should have contact information of where to start to get those assessments.
So if my child's 3 and hasn't started school, what would I do?
You can still check with the elementary school. A lot of speech and language pathologists see children from the elementary school as well as children from a SEEK program, which is Special Education Early Childhood. As young as 3 years old, they have the preschool programs.
When we talked a little bit about labeling, Dr. Kylie, so is this why parents are concerned that they don't want their child, that's not an autistic kid? You know, they look at the disease. We talked about this a little bit before, Carlin, that people look at the disease rather than the kid, or the disorder, excuse me. You know, they're worried about being this child being labeled. Why is it important to still seek out this diagnosis?
Well, I think, you know, the importance is I love the explanation of just, you know, the school being aware, coming in with that full evaluation,
and
the multidisciplinary team.
As a teacher, you know, it helps you so much to actually like teach.
Yes. Because
especially when it comes with other people, other students. I had an autistic student and the parents were so concerned about the label of autism that even though I knew how to deal with him, the students still didn't know how to deal with him, and they were so concerned that they wouldn't allow me to tell the students like why he's the way he is. And that put me in a really hard place because I felt if they knew, you know, then they would be able to treat him better and differently as well than, you know, just making fun of him.
True.
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing. Yeah. I mean, and sometimes teachers can explain it as, you know, everyone has strengths and weaknesses. And if the parents are okay with it, he has more social weaknesses, you know, and how can you help a friend with social weaknesses? These are some ways you can help them. But yeah, that's so having the teacher understand that. I mean, I've had parents come to me and say, you know, teachers say that their child's rude because they're not looking them in the eye and that they aren't saying please and thank you or, you know, just these kind of small things. And that may start to hurt their self-esteem when their teacher doesn't or people don't understand them and why they're doing things. Yeah. And so having that diagnosis, it helps others to understand them and not, you know, I work with sometimes parents that say, oh, yeah, that was me when I was a child. And boy, if my teachers and parents had understood, they wouldn't have put so much pressure on me and they would have been more understanding. Yeah. I wouldn't have been bullied as much. The district would have been more aware of bullying. So, I mean, I see more positives with that. But I definitely, you know, I talk with parents a lot about pros and cons, you know, of what could happen and what their biggest fears are. And sometimes a lot of their fears you know, now this day and age with more people being aware, they're not as
relevant.
Yeah.
There isn't the stigma
anymore.
You know, it's so out there, it's so prevalent that, you know, people are a lot more understanding. Kids are a lot more understanding. We have to give these kids more credit.
Yes.
You know, they can be a wonderful instrument for progress in a child's life. They understand. If you build that kind of community of tolerance in your classroom, in your neighborhood, in your community, it's really amazing to see these kids really bloom.
Yes. And actually, there's been studies showing that if other kids are aware and you do kind of like a peer buddy situation, that is one of the best ways to help these kids learn social skills is in the natural peer environment. So where you actually have like certain buddies that are working with them and saying, oh, you know, I had a really hard day. And then they're like, oh, are you going to ask me about my day? And really like teaching them kind of how to have those ways of building helping them socially.
Well, it's true because we all know someone who was a little off growing up.
Yep.
And we all just didn't know how to deal with them.
Exactly.
So they got made fun of and they got pushed aside. However, if you ask any child, most children who come from, you know, who have some sort of, I don't want to say morals, but have some sort of anything, they have compassion, you know? And so whether they are a bully or not, there's got to be a tinge in them that will be like, oh, well, I would have had a little bit more compassion if I know that something was a little off. I mean, like, I mean, the little children who were had mental disabilities and they were getting made fun of. I remember going up and standing up for them when they were on the playground. But the autistic children who, you know, they were just socially off. They were just made fun of. And you're just like, well, you know, they got something loose. And
yeah.
you don't give them the same compassion because it's not a visible sign.
No, it's not visible. And that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what can parents expect as their child ages, you know, throughout this course?
Great question. So like I kind of alluded to earlier is as kids get older, it becomes more socially nuanced. And that's where like junior high and high school becomes a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. But really getting those early intervention skills and having parents aware and them working socially with their child can make a huge difference to help those years go a little bit easier. As they get into high school, you know, in addition to some of the social challenges, I see that they have a lot of those sort of executive function challenges in junior high and high school. Those include like the planning, the organization, turning in homework, having to be more responsible for things. And so those are some of the things that are important to have an IEP because as they age, the challenges look different at each stage. So maybe when they're younger, it looks more like the fidgetiness in the classroom and the difficulties standing too close and invading other people's space.
Transitioning
is a huge one.
To the carpet.
That's a huge one. But as they get older, then it's like, well, now they're having to change classrooms in junior high and be organized and then also know socially how to enter a group and exit one. And so, you know, kind of knowing developmentally each stage looks a little bit differently. So having the IEP and those supports and awareness of the teacher and parents is important at each stage and kind of revisiting it as a team, you know, the treatment team that's working with
them. So that's what I say, every year do you revisit this? I mean,
yeah, so educationally the IEP meets every year at least and to talk about plans. And then also, you know, parents should really start, you know, with these new laws coming into place with insurance covering more, really access their medical team as well, like their psychologist or OT or speech therapy or ABA providers that maybe they can get through their insurance as well. Having a team approach really helps.
Thanks to Dr. Kylie for helping us learn about autism. If you want more information, go to today's show on our episodes page on our website or visit drkyliejackson.com. Our conversation will continue with Dr. Kylie after the show for our Parent Saver Club members. See our website to sign up. We'll be talking about ways parents can teach their kids with autism at home.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Hey, everybody. It's Parent Savers. It's Dwayne Richards from the blog Daddy Doing Work, which is all about being a new dad. And today I'm talking about something that's near and dear to me, which is the challenges of being a black dad. Now, here's the thing. I am an African-American guy. You know, there's some stereotypes about us that if you look on the news or something, you may see some athlete with 9 kids or things like that, or they're in jail. It's funny to me. I keep thinking to myself, if I was an alien coming from Mars and knew nothing about what black dads were about, and this alien landed in Los Angeles and turned on the TV and saw what was going on in the local news or turned on ESPN or something, that alien might think that black dads are just not so great. But most of us, I would say the vast majority of us, are just normal dads, just like you and me, you know? We love our kids. We're all about being strong. We're all about being disciplinarians. We're also very loving and caring towards our kids. So every now and then I look back on some of the things that people say, like, oh, man, hey, you're actually taking care of your kids. That's a good thing, you know? And it doesn't really get me angry. I actually laugh at it now because I know I'm a good dad. I know that I care about my kid. So it's really all about being colorblind. When we raise kids, we just want our kids to know that everyone's created equal. I'm no different than you guys are. It's a guy who loves his kid. So that being said, I want to thank you so much for listening. And if you have an idea or a parenting topic that you want to talk to me about, please email me through my blog at Daddy Doing Work, or you can post your ideas on my Facebook page. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
That wraps up today's episode. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for our expert about today's show or the topics we discussed, call our Parent Savers hotline at 619-866-4775 or send us an email through our website, parentsavers.com, or Facebook page, and we'll answer your question in an upcoming episode. Don't forget to tune in to Behind the Scenes Parent Savers Club to keep listening. Next week, we're educating ourselves about SIDS. Thanks for listening to Parent Savers, empowering new parents everywhere.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.